The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And my guest today, one of my favorite German heavy metal bands, some of the pioneers of German heavy metal, talking about Accept. I caught up with Accept guitar player Wolf Hoffman and new, well, he's not really that new these days. He's been in the band for 20 years. Sorry. He's not really new these days. He's been in the band for 9 years. Talking about singer Mark Tornillo from New Jersey. They've got a great story about how they met, how Mark ended up joining Accept, and how what really sparked the reunion and the band's current resurgence. They're bigger now than maybe they've ever been. It's possible they're more successful, like I said, than the height of their 80s metal run. And there's a great article in the Wall Street Journal about producer Andy Sneap. We all know Sneap and how he's helping the metal music scene, producing albums for Accept and Judas Priest, to name a few. It's a great read. You'll hear what Wolf and Mark have to say about Sneap. He's another reason for their big resurgence, what specifically he's done for the band. They're also talking about the very first gig they ever performed as Accept, with Mark fronting at a club in New York City. And Wolf is also talking about the band's first run in the late 70s and early 80s, when they opened for everyone from AC/DC to Motley Crue to Iron Maiden. Accept also just released a brand new album, Symphonic Terror, live at Wacken 2017, the biggest heavy metal festival in Europe. It takes place in Wacken, Germany. It's the live performance that Accept did with a full symphonic orchestra. Very cool. The album is out now, and you can order it on their website at acceptworldwide.com. And of course, it's available wherever you buy music, anywhere, or you stream it, Spotify, whatever. They're going to talk about what it was like playing with the 50-piece orchestra from Prague, and we'll get some details on the band's upcoming tour, Accept and the Orchestra of Death, Symphonic Terror Tour. It starts April 20th, 2019 in Germany. Lots of stuff to talk about. Let's get to it. Wolf Hoffman and Mark Tornillo from Accept are on Talk is Jericho now. That is my mission, is to not answer this, ask you the same questions all the time, because I get asked the same questions all the time.
Can we ask you shit?
We can interact. You can do whatever the you want here on Talk is Jericho, and I'm here with Wolf and Mark from Accept.
Yo.
Beautiful bus, Beat the Street, which I always thought was an interesting name for a bus company. I don't really know what that means.
I don't know either.
Where they got it from.
I'm not sure either. But
we don't question it. We just take it as it comes.
And also, too, you know it's going to be a good bus, because in Europe, I mean, at least for you guys, probably don't have to worry about it anymore, but you get some pretty shitty buses sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
they're a good company.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
I don't really like the double deckers, like I said, because I can't ever stand up anywhere. Usually we have the ones that are like one level.
Right.
They're much taller, you know,
and you hit your head many times because you forget, right?
Damn right. I get up out of the bunk and doink.
Luckily, I'm a dwarf. Yeah.
So, you know. You're a little guy from Jersey.
Exactly.
Right? So you guys, you mentioned that you've been here since May over in Europe. Huge kind of resurgence for Accept over the last, I mean, it's been almost 10 years now.
Yeah.
But
nine, I believe.
9 years,
yeah,
right?
10, yeah, correct.
And that's how long you've been in the band for, too, Mark. 9 years.
Yep.
So, and first of all, a lot of that has to do with the records you've done with Andy Sneap. Did you see the Wall Street Journal?
Yes.
I did.
Pretty cool. That's unbelievable.
He
deserves it.
Yeah, it says that Andy Sneap is slowly saving.
Quietly.
Quietly.
I don't know, think it's quietly, but he does it.
But, I mean, did that make you feel good? Because it was based around Accept.
Judas
Priest in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, that's pretty damn cool.
You know,
I thought the same thing. You don't,
it's probably
you don't
the only time you'll ever see our name in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, you don't get to talk to a journalist from Wall Street Journal ever, really.
So they called you and said it's so-and-so from the Wall Street
Absolutely.
Journal?
Yeah, which is great. You know,
there were some great quotes in there talking about, because Sneap kind of did it the same way that Rick Rubin did it with Johnny Cash or Diamond or all those guys. What exactly did he tell you when you started working with him, Wolf?
Well, did we ever tell him anything, really? He just came over. He had heard that Accept were planning, to get back onto the scene and to make more albums. So he basically contacted us through our mutual friend, Ed Aborn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shout out to Ed for setting this up, too.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's, Ed is really the man pulling all the strings here.
Yeah, that's right.
No, all of a sudden we get this call. Hey, do you want to meet Andy Sneap? And we were like, sure, why not? We didn't really know who he was, and mm-hmm. we were not quite ready even to think about who was going to produce it, because we were just starting to write songs.
Exactly.
We just had the first ideas down and the first rough sketches for songs and shit, and all of a sudden there's Andy on the doorstep and says hello. So, we had one night of drinking and a couple of days of working together, and that was it. And
drinking is more important than the work.
Yeah, just to break the ice, it was one of those.
It's a bonding ritual.
Yeah, sure it is. Well, because that's the thing. It's not being on stage and working together is great, but it's, especially when you're in a band, it's the time you spend on the bus in between the shows that really decides if you can get along.
Exactly.
Or not. But you had a great quote. In the Wall Street Journal, he said he told you guys to be more German.
Yeah, how trippy is that?
I mean,
nobody ever said that to us.
And what did he mean by that?
He basically, we didn't even know ourselves, but he made us, funny enough, he made us sit down and listen to, I think, all of Restless and Wild and maybe all of Breaker, and Peter and I were sitting there like, school children, basically the teacher telling us what he liked about our stuff, because he grew up listening to Accept, and he said, there's a moment, what did he say? It's one of those moments, or the quality moment, or how did he always say it? I don't know. It's magic moment, or whatever the phrase that he used. And we were totally surprised, because we didn't really think we sounded specifically German, but I guess we do. It's something we can't help. We are German.
There's a real style to it of, we always call it like, it's almost like Bierstein rock or Oktoberfest rock, where you just want to swing your beer back and forth with a big handle and,
like the chant balls, exactly.
Right?
Swing your beer mug like a St. Pauli girl.
Yeah, that's a
it's probably in the DNA or something without us even realizing it.
Right.
Because we didn't really write that stuff back then to sound more German. If anything, we wanted to sound international. We didn't want to be German, really. I mean, we just wanted to be one of the international acts.
Yeah. But then you have, like I said, there is a certain kind of a style to it, which makes Accept does stand out.
Yeah, and since he pointed all that stuff out, we thought, that's easy. We can do more of that. If that's what you're after, we've got plenty of that,
Yeah, right.
So it was kind of easy from there on out,
It was enlightening, though, I mean, he really went, point by point through the music and, this, we need more of this, we need more of this. And they were like, okay.
And how was that for you, Mark? Because you're coming in not just as the new singer, but also with this new producer, and you're the new guy in the group as well.
Yeah, I had no idea where we were going, man. Yeah. It was kind of sketchy at first for me, for sure. But it just really worked well together, When we started writing and the ideas started coming together, and once Andy approved of the ideas, then, it was... It really flowed, but we took a long time to write Blood of the Nations.
Yeah, it was a few months. It was definitely, we had plenty of ideas, but didn't really know how should we sound after all these years having been away from the scene, and, should we sound different? Should we sound exactly retro, like back in the old days, or, there was a lot of, a lot of songs that kind of went sideways, basically.
Sure.
And he was the one who really said, no, we don't want that. We want this. So,
is it hard sometimes, like for our last album, we had, we decided that, okay, this producer, he's the principal, he's the boss, he has the final say.
Right.
And sometimes during the recording process, you're like, this guy, who does he think he is? It's driving me crazy.
Producers can get on your nerves.
Yeah.
Especially, as a singer, man. Especially, that was good. Can you do it one more time? That was even better. How about one more? Do you have one more in you? Yeah. How many one mores do you want?
Right. Exactly. And also for you too, it was interesting because I had the TT Quick record, Medal of Honor.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
A great tune and front burner.
Nice.
Produced by Wacko.
from Raven.
Yes,
there's
was.
A little bit of stuff for you there. So a
bunch of different producers on that record.
Really?
Yeah.
But it'd been a while since you were in the scene though. At that point in time, were you still gigging, playing?
Very rarely. Very rarely. I was out for a while. You know, I mean, when the whole thrash thing hit, not thrash. I mean, when the whole West Coast grunge thing hit.
You're right.
It was which was pretty much. We just said, you know what, we're beat at that horse here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to start playing grunge. I'm not going to cut my hair, put on a flannel shirt, and look like a freaking idiot. So I'm not doing it. And I pretty much went into my other life. And I was raising children at the time. I needed a real job. I joined the electricians union. I had always been an electrician. And that's what I did for, like, a long time. Yeah. I still do.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, sure.
I still belong to the union, so.
How did you end up working with Wolf? How did you find...
It just happened really by accident. We Peter and I jammed one day, and some guy just suggested, there's a singer who lives close by. Why don't you invite him? He can sing all the material and see how you get along and see how it sounds together. But really, that was just all there was. There was no big auditioning. There was no big looking for a singer because it wasn't really on our mind at that point. We were just purely jamming for fun, and all of a sudden... In comes Mark, takes his shirt off, and starts singing Flesh Rockin' Man. And it sounded amazing right away. And I looked at Peter, he looked at me and said, like, what the hell? Where's this guy from? It's amazing. You know, and we thought, there's a chance to maybe start the whole machine back up again. But it really happened after that moment, and it wasn't like ever on our minds before that. Day.
You just mentioned something that's very important to you for people that might not know. It's like you said, we were jamming for fun. Peter right. and I were jamming for fun. And were you ready to go forward with Accept? And you didn't care if it got huge or not huge or whatever it may be. You just wanted to keep playing because you enjoy playing music.
Yeah, but we didn't have a singer, and we right. weren't really, I mean, we didn't think there is one out there, and we didn't really actively look for anybody.
No, they weren't openly auditioning anyone. It was just really a
interesting
a freak thing, man.
So you didn't put a call out that you were looking for a new singer, guys?
No.
Wow.
No, hell no.
Guy who owned the studio just happened to know me and got in touch with me. Peter called me up. I went and jammed with him. And
the rest is
I thought that was going to be it. You know?
Right.
2 weeks later, I got a call from Peter again. He goes, what did you think about doing a record and a tour? I'm like,
So how did that go with your wife and your family?
That was the first thing I said. Let me get back to you. Let me ask the wife, you know. And I ran it by her, and she says, "Well, if you don't, there'll be no living with you. So have fun." She enjoys it though. She loves it.
Do you find now, like you mentioned, 9 years later, working with Mark, that Accept is bigger at this point than you guys ever were in the '80s?
Yeah, I would say so.
I think so. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, it's really hard to say because you're comparing apples to oranges. Yeah. Back in the day, the scene was so different. It was all based on selling records, and touring was just a side business. Now it's just the opposite. Now we're all just make records to tour, basically. But still, overall, I would say we have now a more successful period and a more of a stable point in our career than we've ever had. You know, we've made four... strong albums, studio albums, live albums, you name it. It's all happening, and it's happening right now, and it's more successful, I would say.
Because you can see, like, on all the festivals, you guys are always headlining the stage, second stage, main stage, whatever
right,
it may
right,
be.
Right, right, right.
You know, people really are into it, which is great to see. So, Mark, let's talk about what those first gigs were like once you joined the band. But before we do that, I want to say thank you to a sponsor who not only makes this podcast possible, but who's keeping my teeth looking healthy and whitey. Talking about getquip.com/Jericho. I don't go anywhere without my Quip toothbrush. Having healthy gums and teeth is super important, and that's why I've got my whole family using Quip electric toothbrushes as well. These are the best toothbrushes on the market. Order one at getquip.com/Jericho and get yourself hooked up with the best toothbrush ever. I know that I don't always do the best job brushing my teeth, especially on the road. When I'm pressed for time, hurrying from one city to the next, I don't brush long enough. I don't brush after every single meal. And I definitely was not changing my toothbrush as often as my dentist told me to. That's a problem. But here's the solution for you. Getquip.com/Jericho. It changes all of that. Quip is an electric toothbrush that packs the same vibration punch to clean your teeth as the more expensive bulkier toothbrushes. Quip is also so much cheaper and smaller. The smaller part is great for me when I'm on the road. The Quip case has a suction cup on the back so I can just stick it to the hotel bathroom mirror or the shower, then grab it and shove it in my bag as I'm running out the door to catch a plane or to get on the Fozzie tour bus. I have not forgotten my Quip toothbrush once. I use it every day. Here's something else that's very cool about Quip. It's got a built-in timer that helps you brush your teeth for 2 minutes, which is what the dentist recommends, okay? You don't brush your teeth long enough. I know I don't. 2 minutes is the minimum. Quip will help you get to that minimum. It's got the guiding pulses that let you know when to switch sides as well. It's an electronic toothbrush, man. Not only is it making sure I'm brushing better and longer, they also deliver new brush heads on my dentist's recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5 and free shipping worldwide. $5 and free shipping for a new brush head? What? Are you crazy? Come on. You can't beat that. I'm not the only one who's loving Quip. The American Dental Association loves it too. Over 20,000 dentists and hygienists and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers, including me, use Quip every single day. Okay, you got to try Quip for yourself. And here's the deal. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/Jericho right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. Think about that. Getquip.com/Jericho to get your first refill pack for free and free shipping, of course, as well. I'm going to spell it out for you. Getquip.com/Jericho. GETQUIP.com/Jericho. That's getquip.com/Jericho. Do something nice for yourself and something even nicer for your teeth. Shiny, white, clean, healthy teeth and gums. I want you to do it. Go to getquip.com/Jericho. GETQUIP.com/Jericho. Go do it now and make that smile bright.
The Team Tiger Awesome Show. Clint Gage, Nick Mundy, and Michael Truly. The Team Tiger Awesome Show. It's a weekly take on current events in pop culture at large that quickly devolves into nonsensical tangents about why cop rock rules. That's not true. Dog police rules. That's stupid. How would a dog even hold a gun? Just don't correct me in front of the listeners. It's done. We're done. Just drop it. If you like your podcast to go all over the place like the copy I just read to you, The Team Tiger Awesome Show is for you. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Every Sunday on Westwood One.
Was that hard for you, Mark, at first to kind of take over this, I'm not going to say iconic voice, but you're taking over, you know, a very major part of the band?
Once we got to doing it, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But the initial reading the comments on the internet and all that stuff while we were making the record and God only knows what's going to happen, it was like, wow.
Yeah.
It was a heavy trip, man. And
I stopped reading all that shit after a while because initially we were hit with this shitstorm when we announced to the world that we're coming back with a new singer, and then everybody had an opinion and they weren't good.
God, it was horrible.
they had written off the thing before it ever even started. I mean, nobody had actually heard a damn thing, and they already said, "Oh, it won't work," and here's why. And you know, everybody was against it just out of principle.
Really, it was hard to find anyone who was
for it.
Yes,
right.
But then once Blood of the Nation came out, it all went backwards.
It shuts everybody up.
Yeah, it kind of did. Yeah. It took about a year or so, and there was no discussion anymore. Nonsense,
there's a great story about Paul McCartney when the Beatles were making Sgt. Pepper, and all the critics were like, the Beatles are done, they're finished, they take 6 months to make a record, it's going to be terrible, they're finished. And McCartney was just like, all right, motherfuckers, just wait and see what happens, right?
And well, in a weird way, that's kind of what happened to us.
Right.
I mean, because all these comments happened while we were still writing and working on Blood of the Nations. And our first record.
On a fire
and it was kind of, we had the same attitude, you know, just white guys, we'll show you, you know.
Yeah.
It made us put even more steam and effort into it.
Doesn't it kind of, the way that the world is now talking about comments on social media and stuff, it's like, it drives me crazy, because if you're a fan of a band, if you're a fan of Accept or Kiss, for example, or whoever it may be.
Fozzie,
right? But not, but I'm talking about bands that have replaced members.
Yeah.
Like, let's say like Journey. Like, we want Steve Perry, okay, but Arnell is a great singer. Do you just want the band to break up and be done?
Hell no.
Like, you know what I mean?
That's
what I'm saying. So, like, just give it a shot and go with it.
I kind of relate it to, it's kind of like kids when their parents are getting divorced, you know? And the kid's like, no, I want you to stay together. I want you to stay together. You'd rather have us be f-ing miserable.
Right.
So you could say, I live with my mom and my dad. It's the same damn thing.
Right.
You know? I mean, move on.
Yeah, exactly. And then my thing is, if I'm an Accept fan,
yeah,
I know that Wolf and Peter aren't going to put this out or hire a guy, and it's not going to be great.
Right.
So trust the guys that you respect.
Yeah, and all it takes is, I think, whenever, whoever you replace, I think as long as you find the right guy. I mean, look at Judas Priest. They you know, KK Downing, perfect right. fit. I mean, right. I mean you would never think they would replace KK Downing.
Can Sneep now for?
Yeah, well, that's a different story. Oh, sorry.
I know. Right.
Have you seen him?
I have not.
We played with him already. I saw him in New Jersey when they came through.
Oh, okay.
And he hooked me up. It was great. And then we just played with him, and we're playing with him again
tomorrow.
Saturday.
Well, Saturday. Yeah, yeah.
At a festival
in Vienna. Yeah. No, one off in, oh, in Vienna.
Right on.
Yeah.
That would be a good tour, except in
I know it would be. It would be great, wouldn't it?
Rob, if you're listening, make it happen.
Yeah, man. Make it happen.
The metal god.
How was the first show playing with Accept?
The very first show we did was in New York, at the Gramercy. So I kind of...
That was a home show for you.
That's your backyard, yeah.
I kind of, you know, I almost knew everyone in the place, you know. like 800 of my closest friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of knew what was going to happen there. 3 days later, I'm on stage in Lithuania. I'd never been to Europe. I have no idea what to expect. You know, I felt like, you know, Spanky and the old little rascals. I wanted to walk out with a garbage can lid. Right, and go, friends, Romans, and countrymen.
Ting, 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 ting.
Yeah. But walked out, and right from the get-go, it was like, you know, old home week, man. It's the music. It's
right.
It's what it is. You play the songs. If you play them properly, you can't lose.
And like you said, too, having a strong batch of material from your own stuff.
Yeah.
You know, as you move forward now, four albums in, what songs, like, you have to play a good significant amount of your old catalog.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Which ones, like, is it harder and harder to figure out, like, oh, we got to drop this one, we want to play this? Because obviously you want to sing your songs,
yeah,
too.
But it's a luxury problem to have, you know. You've got so many to choose from. It's actually almost fun to do it. It's never a hard choice. But yeah, basically we learn from experience. We know which songs really the audience likes to hear most, and those there's a bunch of songs we almost have to play every show, like Balls to the Wall, Metal Heart, Princes of the Dawn. But you know, I tell you what most fans really think is amazing, how well this new stuff blends with the old stuff. You know, it's not really like it's two different worlds. It really goes song to song, and you never know, is it old, is it new? You almost have to ask yourself which album is that from. But it almost sounds like
it just flows good.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. You mentioned a couple of your songs. I had heard something I never heard before a few months ago. Did you guys write I'm a Rebel for AC/DC?
No, it was actually the opposite.
Brandon Young wrote it, right?
Yeah, Alec Young.
Okay.
They've got so many brothers and nephews and whatnot. And right. One of their guys, I think his name was Alec Young, and he went by the name of George Alexander for some weird reason. he wrote a song and brought it to AC/DC in like 76, 77, whenever,
right.
In the 70s. They didn't ever record it. They just made a demo, didn't like the song or rejected it for whatever reason. And there it was, and our publisher came to us and said, here, I've got this very commercial song for you guys. Do you want to record it? And we said, oh yeah, sure. At that point, mind you, AC/DC was not as huge. I mean, they were still sort of underground or whatever, just
sure.
Starting to happen.
Right.
And we recorded that song. And somewhere out there in the universe is a demo with Bon Scott that I'd like to get my hands on.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm
wow.
I'm not. And I've heard it. And actually, the our publisher a few years back came to one of our shows in Hamburg. That's where it all happened back in the day. And he had it still on his phone, and we all listened like little fanboys. And I think that original version with Bon Scott is amazing, actually.
Wow, that's pretty cool that there one exists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they keep it locked away in their archive. They're never going to release it. And now, you know.
They're so tight with everything.
Right, and that original writer now has passed away, and so has the publisher. So it's forget it.
Who owns it or whatever.
No, it's never going to see the
light of day. Were you a big Bon Scott fan, Mark? You've got that style.
You know it.
Right.
You know it. He was my favorite, man.
Yeah.
What a shame.
Did you ever see AC/DC?
No, and I had tickets to see AC/DC open for Van Halen in 79, right before he died.
Mm-hmm.
It was Highway to Hell tour. Van Halen was the headliner. And for some reason, they didn't show. I think Phil Rudd's mother died or something.
Gotcha.
MC5 took their place, which didn't suck. but I never got to see him with Bon Scott.
I did.
Did you?
In the 70s, yeah. When it was rumored that Angus Young at that point was like 16 years old or something. I think they overplayed it a little bit. He might have been, but still he was clearly very, very young at that point.
And very small.
Yeah, yeah, we're still small. But
yeah, exactly.
Supposedly he was like only 16 at the time. That's how they... he was announced. This sensational band from AC/DC with this young guitar player, and you know, of course, wearing the uniform.
Sure,
I think he might have been 19 at the time, but who cares?
Did you? Are you from Hamburg?
No, near Cologne.
Near Cologne. Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah. What do you remember about the show? What was Bon Scott like as a frontman?
He was all right. He wasn't a great showman for some reason. I think I always liked him better on records than I did live. He wasn't like as captivating as you think. He didn't impress me as... I mean, everybody was just looking at Angus, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's always Angus's show.
I mean, it was, really. You know, and
even to this day, I saw the show with Axl Rose at the Garden.
Right.
And it was a great, great show. Axl nailed it, but he still hung out at the amps with the other guys while Angus went and did everything. It's still,
really, yeah.
It's still Angus's gig to this day.
His band, his show, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's totally.
Kind of hard to upstage him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
When you mentioned that when you did the Blood of the Nations tour, it was your first tour to Europe. What were some of the big differences that you noticed or things that were confusing to you or food or anything like that?
Food. I eat anything.
Whatever.
Man. I'll eat anything. It's, you know, so I enjoy traveling for that reason. Mm-hmm. Food. I think the biggest thing for me was the fans. They're so different here than they are in the United States.
How do you mean? In what way?
I think they're just so much more into it.
Mm-hmm.
So much more involved in the shows and there's still so many metalheads here.
Right.
It's
insane. I mean, doesn't it look like it's 1985 sometimes when you walk out there?
Oh, my goodness. Right? Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
Especially when you get into more of these type of countries, the Hungaries and the Czech Republics and, you know, those type of
Eastern
things.
Bloc.
And everybody wearing their denim vests with all the
leather,
patches and shit. I mean, this is almost a culture
like,
that you
like
don't see.
It's a way of life.
Yeah.
You know, you're and,
and
metal.
The craziest thing is it has never changed here. It just sort of... It's like a time warp. It stood still, and it's still like it was back then.
It's my kind of time warp.
Yeah, in the U.S., it sort of moved on, and people entered different things. They threw away the denim jackets, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing to me, though, when you come to Europe, and there's so many festivals here. Like, I've never heard of the Pheasant Festival. That's where we played today. And then we're going tomorrow to, like, Rockland and Rock Planet and Rock World and Legends of Rock and all this. It's like every country, multiple places has them.
It's dozens in Germany alone.
Right. Small ones, big ones, and everything in between.
Yeah.
But it's really cool to see the culture of heavy metal over in Europe, like you mentioned, is still so popular.
It definitely is. And people make an event of it. They almost use it as a mini vacation. They really go for 3 days. They camp and do all that stuff. So I think it's great.
Yeah. It's
almost like a mini Woodstock type deal every weekend.
At every one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, when you went to America for the first time, what tour was that?
That was Kiss, 1984.
Man.
Opening for Kiss. That was the first shows ever, and that was a trip for us, being the European band coming over to the big United States, and everything was huge in comparison.
You're a big Kiss fan, right?
Yeah.
So is our drummer. Oh, boy.
Oh really?
Oh, yeah. He drives me nuts with it. I mean, he's fanboy number one. He's over the top with it, but yeah.
So how was that for you to tour with Kiss? Were they cool to you guys, or did you see them at all?
Yeah, it was really two worlds clashing, because here we are, this German band, very serious, taking everything super seriously, and you know, I don't know, it was all about the music. And then we play with Kiss, and it's all about the show. I mean, the musicianship is, you know, it was on a grand scale. Everything was with forklifts and tractor trailers and arenas every night and fireworks, and we've never
level of production.
We'd never seen any of that in Europe. I mean, even when we watched other bands perform, but you know, the U.S. was still like two notches up from there.
Yeah, sure, of course,
huge. So that was really mind blowing for us. But I guess we sort of adapted, and you know, got to know it, and it was great. We stayed on the road for like 8 months when we first came over here.
Kiss over there.
Over to the US.
What did you notice the difference when you came to America? Were the things that kind of you couldn't believe?
we noticed that everybody, young and old, and everywhere you went, every gas station, it was like, are you guys in a band? Oh, that's amazing. And you know, that sort of thing. Where in Europe, like, it was like, great. Who are these bums, you know? Yeah. Get a real job. Get right. out of my, you know.
But that's the thing with Accept. Like, if you're talking about that 80s time frame, and you mentioned the show, and all the bands went through the stage of almost, even Judas Priest with like Turbo,
right.
Turbo Lover, you know, a little bit glammy. Queensryche went through it. Except never did that. You guys always were just kind of like the leather and hair, and that
pretty
was
much.
It.
I mean, we had one phase where we tried out with a new singer in the 90s.
Oh, yeah,
Eat the Heat, and right. we sort of glammed up a little bit for that, but we realized it's not working. It's not really for us, and the whole thing was a failed attempt anyhow.
Yeah.
But it was really in those moments or in those days, it was really all about hitting the million album sales, really. That's what everybody told you. I mean, we were with CBS, Sony, and all the successful albums on there were like 10 million, 5 million, and we were like the little band from Germany that never hit that, had that huge commercial success. So we were constantly pushed into that direction. Well, if only you did a little more radio-friendly songs right. and a little more commercial this, and we said, all righty, then we're going to give it a try, and, you know.
Can't that you was be our, someone else?
Yeah.
That was our attempt, because nobody had ever, this was like pre-alternative, pre-Metallica being so huge. So at that point, it was commercial Bon Jovi style or nothing. Mm-hmm. Either you went, you know, with a mainstream or you weren't successful, pretty much.
That's true, though.
I mean, it was the time of MTV. Everybody was pretty, had the great hair.
Yeah.
And those were the bands that were selling.
Well, and not to mention that, you know, Udo, as your singer, was not a good-looking guy, shall we say. You know?
Put it mildly, yeah. So we didn't fit that mold. That mold, and that's why we were always the outsider. We always had a huge sort of underground following, cult following, amongst musicians and all that, but never really the sort of the masses who buy records.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see Accept back in the day?
You did?
Oh, yeah.
You never knew. Where'd
I
you see
know.
It?
Well, I saw the Metal Heart Tour.
Oh, shit.
In at the Capitol Theater in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And then the night you guys played at L'Amour.
That night. Yeah.
You were the opening act.
T.T. Quinn?
Yeah.
Really? Were they nice to you?
I didn't.
Probably not. Probably not.
The only person I met was Udo, and he and I had a very short conversation. Gabby came downstairs and looked at Udo and went, "Udo,
get away!
On the bus, schnell!" And I went, he goes, "Schnell, I must go." That was it. That was my whole interaction with him. Hysterical.
You know, what's funny mentioning Gabby is that you mentioned Ed, his ex-wife Tammy.
Yeah.
When my son was born, Tammy came to visit my son, and Gabby was in Tampa visiting her.
Oh, really?
So she came. I never met Gabby, but my wife met Gabby when Gabby met my son when he was a little baby. So there you go.
It's a small world.
It's a small world. Yeah, exactly. So, Mark, I want to ask you a couple questions about your former band, T.T. Quick, Medal of Honor. I had that record. But first, I got to take care of the OG Talk Is Jericho sponsor. He's been with us from the beginning. I'm talking about Diamond Dallas Page and DDPY. And by the way, it's funny how some people are yelling at me for making these ads seem like the people are still in the studio. Okay, they're not in the studio, but it's how I do my ads. So if you like it, great. If you don't like it, don't listen. This is how I do my ads. Right, Mark? Right? Right, Wolf? All right. Now that we've got that strained out, follow along. DDPY, not only supporting this show, but Dallas has also helped my wrestling and singing careers. I'm not sure I'd still be doing either if not for DDPY. My back was in very, very bad shape. Three separate doctors told me I needed back surgery. I started doing DDP yoga instead. And here I am 5, 6, 7 years later, healthy, working hard, having the best matches of my career and the best shows Fozzy's ever done. I'm at the top of my game, thanks to DDPY. And one of the reasons for that is I have the DDPY Now app on my phone. I can do DDPY wherever I am, which happens to be in Canada right now, for the final dates of Fozzy's Judas Rising worldwide tour. And Fozzy guitar player Rich Ward and I have been doing DDPY in between the shows together. Rich usually likes to do it outside. It's too damn cold, so we're doing it inside. It's freezing temperatures here in Canada. But that's cool because you can do DDPY anywhere. You can do it in the dressing room. You can do it on the bus, in the hotel room. People love Dallas's DDPY program. So do I. And he's so sure that you're going to love it too. is giving you a free 7-day trial, okay? All you have to do is download the DDPY Now app and get started. And I'm not just talking about free access to the workouts. I mean, you can try everything the app has to offer free for 7 days. Hundreds of workouts. You can do live workouts with an instructor from the DDPY Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. You can connect a Bluetooth heart monitor to the app so you can track your progress. And you can check out all the recipes and nutrition tips as well that Dallas has on the app. It's going to help you eat healthier. I know you've heard me say it over and over again, but DDP yoga really is a kick-ass cardio program, essentially. It's going to improve your flexibility and strengthen your core. I am proof positive that it works. At 48 years old, having 4-star matches, 5-star matches, and some of the best rock and roll shows we've ever had. Quebec City the other night was insane. Montreal, great, great shows on this Judas Rising tour. I want you to try it. Remember, free 7-day trial now at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Dallas has even extended the big Black Friday sale that he started last week. He's now offering 30% off the DDPY workouts and the DDPY Now app through the 30th. You still got almost a week. This is the biggest sale ever on the DDPY program, so don't miss your chance to get started on DDPY. And yes, you still get 3 months free on the app with any DVD program purchase. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get this special sale offer. That's 30% off the DDPY workouts and the DDPY Now app if you go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And if you're really struggling to get started on the DDPY program, then pre-order DDP's upcoming book, super inspirational, Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It. Okay, it's filled with lessons from DDP's life that share his own personal struggle to find his calling and overcoming one obstacle after another. Unstoppable is a Bible for anyone who needs to be re-inspired to follow their dreams and take real action towards the things that matter most to them. Okay, DDP's book, Positively Unstoppable, is available January 15th, 2019, but you can pre-order it now anywhere books are sold. Okay, so let's go through more time. The Black Friday sale is extended. You get 30% off the DDPY workouts and the DDPY Now app. If you go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho, you get a free 7-day trial now at ddpyoga.com/Jericho for that app. And The Art of Owning It, Positively Unstoppable, DDP's upcoming inspirational book, is available January 15th, but you can pre-order it now anywhere books are sold. Get hip to DDP yoga, man. It will save your life like it saved mine. Get in the best physical and mental shape of your life and go do it now. I just want to ask a quick TT quick question. Did you guys ever like do any touring at all?
Yeah, in the 80s.
Who did you go out with? Did you get
a Megadeth? We were out with for a while.
Okay.
We were out with Motorhead for a while. We did an extensive tour with Raven at the time because we were label mates.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But that was mostly 86, 87, somewhere around there. Got mostly all North America.
Gotcha, yeah, yeah.
Canada and the U.S.
Gotcha.
Mexico.
When you're talking about the 80s time frame and Balls to the Wall, I remember I was probably 13. Yeah, because that came out in 84, right?
Yeah.
And it was like Balls to the Wall. It was so like controversial. Like you couldn't play that song too loud because if your mom and dad heard it, you can't say balls in a song. Was that a kind of a controversial move to put out called that? Yeah,
absolutely. It was on purpose. You know, we always did these sort of slightly shocking things, and prior to that, we had a song called Son of a Bitch, and it was full of bad words, and, you know, it was just, you know, part of the rebellion, and let's shock the parents, kind of, that was the vibe back then. This is when metal was still meant to shock, and now it's just mainstream in a weird way.
Now it's anything goes.
Well, it's also hard to shock people now in this day and age.
That's the other thing, too. But you back know? Then, they were kind of slightly shocked by it, and, you know.
So did the record company say okay, let's do it, or were they like, hey, you gotta watch the Balls to the Wall, buddy?
No, they were into it. I mean, they were aware that it was outside of the mainstream, but they were, you know, there was something cool about it that they liked, apparently, or else they wouldn't have signed us, you know.
Got played on MTV, so
that's true,
you know.
Big hit on MTV, wasn't it?
Beavis and Butthead, too.
Hey, who's this guy?
You're right.
What did they show? Don't forget. Udo, it's a badge of honor, man.
He was on the wrecking ball or something, Udo was, they were talking about him being on the wrecking ball. Who's this guy?
Yeah.
Is he an elf? Talking about accept and being playing as long as you have. Also, too, like I saw a TV special. It was like a music thing, and it was a festival that you guys did. It was Motley Crue was on it, Quiet Riot was on it, except Night Ranger. You probably don't remember, it was a million years ago.
I do, actually. Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo, that's it. The Kalamazoo Rock Fest or something. For some reason, some music channel was there and shot a bunch of stuff and put it together.
Yeah.
And I remember they would just show clips of the bands playing, and they showed Accept, and it was a song that I'd never heard.
Really?
But it was super fast, and it had this amazing harmony guitar solo. It took me years to figure out what song it was, because I didn't have any Accept records before Balls to the Wall.
Ah.
I had them all after, and it was Fast as a Shark.
Right.
And could that possibly be the first thrash song?
So they say.
That's the way we understand it.
Is that what people say?
And I'll tell you what, I remember hearing that song for the very first time at L'Amour in Brooklyn. Mm. I mean, we were like a house band there for a while. And DJ played that. He goes, I have something to, because we had already had, you know, the Breaker album. Played all that stuff, right? All of a sudden he goes, I have a brand new record from Accept. Wait to hear this. Puts an album going,
Hi D.
And then it just started, and we were like, just went batshit crazy.
So tell us a little bit about that. Like, if it is the first or one of the first, obviously it's not something that you were hearing a lot of at the time.
No, it really. I clearly remember how we wrote the song and how it all came about. It was really the drummer, Stefan, who came up with the crazy idea of playing double bass, double kick all the way through, and we'd never done that. Mm-hmm. So he came up with that basic idea, the concept, and we sort of had the riff. That was fairly easy, and then I wrote all that weird middle section for it. But then at the very end, or like, we wanted to really have an intro for it or something, and I thought about it, and I came up with the idea of having, like, to put on a record that's completely the opposite of what's about to happen, just to fool people and thinking something else. I thought everybody who buys the record thought that they might have bought the wrong record.
Right?
Well, that was the idea. You go to the store, you buy the new Accept record, you put it on, and say, what the hell? Somebody put the wrong record
in the sleeve.
That was the idea. And I thought maybe we use like an opera part or something. And then we already had recorded the basic track, and we were looking for any sort of intro to use, and we went actually through the record collection of the studio owner's mother. We recorded at Dirk Studios at the time, where the Scorpions used to record and all
that. Is that Dieter Dirks?
Dieter Dirks, the studio. And there was Grandma Dirk. She had a record collection. And we thought, what kind of records do you have?
Brilliant. This is great.
What kind of records do you have that we can possibly steal and abuse, you know, and scratch up, because we wanted to rip the needle off? And she had some children's records that Dieter Dirks, as a kid, actually sang on. So there was all these German traditional folk songs that everybody heard as a kid. And there was the one song, it's called Ein Heller und ein Batzen, that had this middle section where there is no lyrics, because we thought, like, German lyrics, don't want that again, because we didn't really want to sound too German. You know, we wanted it to be international. And that little segment is Hi-Di, Hi-Do, Hi-Da, which that's what we used. So we borrowed that album and put it on and ripped the needle off and kind of destroyed the record for Mama Dirks. And
there you have it, folks.
The story.
There was a video of that.
Might never have heard that story before.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
When I was in high school, we used to do these, they were called like lip sync competitions.
Oh, yeah?
And we'd put together, but we never did just normal. Like, some guys just do like Metallica or, you know, some pop. We would always splice together different songs.
Ah.
And we did this one that we used Hi-Di, Hi-Do, Hi-Da, and scratched the record to go into the thing that we were doing. I remember we had this guy wearing like a children's dress with a wig, and it was a guy, and he came and danced around to that Hi-Di, Hi-Do, and people in the crowd were like, what the hell is this? And then it scratched off, and then we started into it. So we did the same thing that you guys did.
Crazy, huh?
But it's really the inside knowledge is that Dieter Dirks is singing on that piece.
Yeah.
That's the funniest part.
Sorry, Mrs. Dirks, for destroying your record.
Yeah.
You're talking about lyrics for the last four records that you've done, Rise of Chaos and Blood of Nations and the other ones. Do you write all the lyrics, or do you still write? Because I know Deffy,
Gabby,
Gabby still
contributes.
She still writes.
She will come up with some ideas that are just, you know, that so out of the ballpark for me.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never thought of it. And go, well, okay, let's run with that. Sometimes, you know, the hooks are there, and sometimes they're not. But, you know, for the most part, I write most of the verses and the lyrics and stuff. So,
which makes sense, because, you know, he's the one who has to sing it.
Right.
It's his language. I mean,
yeah,
it's It's not our job.
Come on, man.
Here, get busy.
Why was she called Deafy back in the day?
Because to have a female write a song, balls to the wall, it would have been looked at like slightly strange, you know, and we didn't really wanted people to know that, you know, she's the manager and my wife. Well, she wasn't my wife at that time yet, but it, you know, we thought keep it a secret and just sort of went with it. Just stay in the background.
With I was just popped in my head, the sleeve for Balls to the Wall. You guys are all, I think you're all with no shirts on.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, baby. Except for Udo.
Yeah, no, he keeps his shirt on.
That wasn't a good idea. We told him to keep the shirt on. That was also Gabby's. I mean, she is so much the creative motor behind this band, or the motor in general in this band for like 40 years almost, and she was always the one who made all these cover concepts or had the ideas and was there at the photo sessions and had the ideas for pictures and, you know.
Yeah. Was Peter the hand model on that one as well?
No, he wasn't. No.
For the cover with the ball?
No, yeah. That was actually a guy that the studio, the photographer knew. He was a boxer.
Hmm.
So he was in pretty good shape and...
Hold this ball.
It was actually a rock.
Okay. Yeah. When you, I just want to ask a couple more questions here. You mentioned L'Amour, and we had the pleasure of playing L'Amour right before.
Such an iconic.
Tell us a little bit about that place and how much it meant to the New York heavy metal scene.
It was the New York heavy metal scene. And we actually played there. I played there at TT Quick in 1979 when it first opened. It was a totally different lineup for us at that time. And then about, I guess around 1980, we started playing there every Thursday night on a weeknight. And it was just, I mean, it was a crazy, crazy thing. I mean, back then you could do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And everybody came through there. We opened up for everybody that you could possibly imagine in that building. And then some.
I remember it being tiny and stinky and jammed. I mean, it was...
Well, it was big at that point.
Was it? I remember it
L'Amour, being... It held about 3,000 people.
Was it really? A couple of them,
I think you guys broke the record that night.
Really?
There was 3,800 people in that
building. Shit. I remember it being tiny.
Maybe you're thinking of a different place.
It's long and deep. You probably couldn't see it.
Or maybe at that point you were playing just the stadiums and arenas so much it just seemed small for you.
Why? It felt small on stage. Maybe the stage was small.
Stage wasn't gigantic.
No, maybe that was it.
By any means. But, it was, I mean, it was the entire scene.
Hmm.
You know, there was nothing like that anywhere else. They actually opened up one in Queens after that. It was L'Amour East.
Yeah.
And then one in Long Island, L'Amour's Far East. But they never really had the impact that the one in Brooklyn did.
What was the craziest night you ever had there?
We were playing on a Thursday night. The next night was Priest and Maiden at the Garden.
What a bill!
So we're getting ready to go on, and the owner comes in and he says, "You know, the guys from Iron Maiden are here. They want to know if they can hang out in the dressing room." We're like, "Yeah, well, we're gonna say no. Yeah, come on, bring them in." So they all came back. We hung out, and this time we asked them if they wanted to play. No. We don't want to get up. Okay, no problem. We get on stage. About halfway through the set, my guitar tech's looking at me. He's going, come here. Everybody goes, they want to play. I'm going, really? They want to play? Okay, well, let's bring them up. The next song. I said, tell them to come up next song. And then I introduced them. I go walking off stage. Steve Harris grabs me. He goes, where are you going? Bruce isn't here. I went, what? So I sang Rothschild with Iron Maiden that night. Place, you want to talk about a place going batshit crazy, man. It was insane.
Cool. Yeah, Maiden hanging out at L'Amour, right?
Yeah, it was ass kicking, man. And my sound man captured it on a cassette tape. So I still have it. I've never seen any video of it, but I have the recording.
That's one thing. Back in those days, it wasn't like it is. Everyone has a video. You want to see show from last night? Go on.
I miss those days. Super because of it. I mean, you could be so much more adventurous and ballsy. You could try new shit out, and you'd always thought, well, you know, the moment you play that note, it's gone forever. Who cares? Let's have fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now you always think in the back of your mind, oh, they're going to tape this, and
that's true.
I've fucked up, so it's gonna be out there, you know.
Let's play a new song tonight. Well, what if they film it and it gets out there and maybe it doesn't sound great?
Yeah, so yeah. It's a shame that,
a lot more pressure in this day and age for that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
because they'll get you if you do something wrong, you know.
We actually played one night, one of the very few days, maybe if ever in all our career, that we did two shows in a night. We played with Kiss at Radio City Music Hall on that tour, and then we played the same night at Lemours.
Yeah, that was they did a
lot. A lot of the same fans followed us from that show to that show, and I've talked to a lot of people over the years that were at both shows.
Yeah, that's cool.
That night, and it was one of those moments that stand out because we'd never done anything like it.
Yeah,
like,
I remember we did that in the 80s as well. We opened for Ted Nugent at Stabler Arena, drove into New York and played a headline show afterwards.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. Yeah. We've done that before. Manchester, Liverpool. Play the Manchester show in the afternoon. Drop the gear. Don't even take your shit off. It's sweaty and wet. Let's go right to the next gig, right?
It's great.
Rich Ward, the guitar player.
I just saw him.
Yeah, he wanted me to ask you a question.
Oh.
He said when he saw you guys.
All right, Rich. What is it?
It's not too bad. He said you replaced Motley Crue with Ozzy. That Motley Crue was touring with Ozzy, and then Motley got too big, and then Accept came where he wanted to ask, what is it like touring with Ozzy? Did you have any experiences with him?
Of course we did. I mean, it was fun. He was pretty hammered a lot of times. I remember that. Well, that's to be expected. That's Ozzy.
Yeah.
And he sometimes wandered off stage. I remember that. Sometimes when he wasn't in the mood, he just sort of left and...
Like, would just leave in the middle song?
Before the show, and Ozzy was nowhere to be found. I remember that sort of, those kind of stories.
Yeah.
He came into our dressing room dressed as a woman in Sharon's clothing, you know, so I remember that. Still have a picture of that in a dress.
Can you imagine?
Just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great, man. We had a lot of fun.
Well, like you said, too, just in America at that point in time, heavy metal was so big. And
it was.
Those type of tours, right?
We really jumped from tour to tour to tour and just stayed in America for, I believe in that first year, 8 months. The next year, 6 months, we played with everybody. Like Kiss and Iron Maiden forever and Ozzy Osbourne and... Even then with Motley Crue, with Dio, all these bands. It was great.
What tours have you done since you've been in the band that you really enjoyed?
All of them.
Enjoy them all. I think
Wolf.
The highlight probably was the two AC/DC shows, though.
Yeah, that was good. That was
Oh, wow. Cool. Tell us about that. Where was that at?
That was the first tour, 2010. We opened for AC/DC on two open airs in...
Hanover and Stuttgart, I believe.
Stuttgart,
like stadium shows,
outdoor huge open shows. Airs, 80,000.
Just AC/DC and Accept.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was strict, man. They were getting wrong. I mean, not the band. The band was never there, but the whole organization was like, don't do this, don't do that, don't even think about that, and get up, no sound check, and don't step on the Eagle Riser, and
Well, nobody told me asshole, I got this long cable right out on the catwalk first song, and I see Gabby's on the side of the stage going no. Frank's going, oh my god, you're gonna get thrown out, you're gonna shut us off. Well, nobody told me.
Well, I did that at Download last year when Aerosmith played, and the catwalk is there, and you're like, I'm not going to ask because I know what the answer is going to be. So I'm just going to grab the mic at the beginning and run as fast as I can down there.
Yeah.
And at least you know you've got it done. And then they didn't say anything, but I know afterwards, like, no other bands are allowed to use the catwalk.
Right,
you can't
use
the catwalk. So how was that? I mean, so they're very strict, but was the show good?
Yeah.
The fans
it was really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was
great.
And it was weird because it wasn't really a crowd full of metal fans. It was really mom and pop kind of audience.
And
it was really
their audiences are notoriously there just to see AC/DC.
Right.
They can give two shits about the opening act. You know, I mean, we did really well. I thought.
Yeah, we did actually.
How did you get those gigs? It's just whatever. Right, we got this call. Here it is.
Somebody did something, and we got him. I don't know how it.
It's amazing when you play like as big as you guys are, and then you go play with AC/DC, which is as big as it gets.
Pretty much.
You see the difference. You know, it's like going from a club band to this,
right?
And then going from this to seeing that, and you're like, oh my god, we're like.
Yeah. Just the whole production is insane. You go under the stage, and they got the tour of just all the amp. I mean, there's this amp city, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got like 10 Marshall heads, and they're all running, and there's a guy just servicing the head. I mean, there's a guy just in charge of only the amplifiers.
That's it.
I mean, he doesn't do anything else. Just the amplifiers.
Yep.
There's a row of generators and transformers that are freaking huge. I'm going, whoa, man, we can get some power back here.
So talk about, you know, a big production.
Holy it's insane.
Crap. That's the thing. Like our crew is 5, and your crew might be 10, and theirs is like 100.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like,
yeah.
You know, with 18 semis. And like you mentioned, they don't know who's even working for them.
And they stay on the road for like 3 years.
Yeah.
Or 2 years or something, you know. It's a different level altogether.
Just a couple last questions as we wind down here. I was going to ask you. You just got a new guitar player in Accept.
Yeah.
How is
Mr. Uwe?
Uwe. Yeah.
Midnight Uwe.
But it's funny because I saw Kai Hansen. I saw Helloween last night, and he said that.
How was it?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good.
I think one of my all-time favorite bands for what they do. They're the best.
Wait a minute. I thought we are. No. What?
You're up there. See, I said one of my all-time favorite bands.
Ah, good.
Right? Three favorite German bands: Scorpions, Helloween, Accept. There you go.
Thank you.
Backpedaling. But he was talking about how he knows. What's that?
Backpedaler.
No, that's not. It's true. He was talking about Uwe, which is
Uwe,
which is spelled U W E.
Right.
For, it was not German.
Uwe.
What's up, Huey? Huey?
No.
Huey's your new guy? How is it for you? You've had to do this a number of times.
Yeah.
Start working with a new guitar player. Because as a two-guitar band, there's chemistry that you have to have.
Yeah.
How is that? How do you decide on how to use or who to hire, should I say?
Well, basically, you just sit down and play the songs together and see how it feels. Mm-hmm. You know, does it feel like it gels or doesn't it? You know, because some players have a totally different technique. But you know, the way that we play, we have to dig in pretty hard, and you got to play those riffs in a certain manner, I would say, with a certain attitude. You can't just sort of, you know, have the guitar under your chin and, you know, do it really softly. You got to man up.
There's
and
some power,
dig in,
right?
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a matter of attitude, and I guess within a few minutes, you know, right away whether it's going to work or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Do you speak German at all, Mark?
Sauerkraut.
9.
So, do you ever get this? So, I worked in Japan quite a bit. I wrestled there all the time in the 90s, and I was the one Canadian-American guy on the Japanese kind of evil team.
Right. Yeah.
And they spoke English, but sometimes they would all just start speaking in Japanese, and I wouldn't have a clue what they're talking about, but I know that they're talking about me because they look over.
Oh, that's just you paranoid Americans.
Is that, you ever get that? I'm sure the crew is...
I understand a lot more German than I let on.
Yeah.
So. I actually took 4 years of German in school when I was
a kid.
Did
you?
Yeah, I wish I had paid attention.
Yeah, great. See what happens when you dropped out to be a rock singer? You should have paid attention. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well.
Final couple questions. So now with Accept being as big as you guys are, continuing on for sure?
Yeah. Hell yeah. We're already thinking about the next album, you know, it's just going to continue. The train is rolling and there's no stopping.
We're a little too old to take a break, so
yeah.
You really can't, right? There's so much momentum now.
One of the next things that we're scheming on right now is to do a few more shows with an orchestra, because we played last year at Wacken for the first time with an orchestra.
And we have the DVD coming out with the orchestra now.
That's what it's going to come out.
November 23rd.
We'll release this when it comes out for the promo.
Please.
So what's it called?
It's called Symphonic Terror, actually.
Nice thought.
You know, take off on Teutonic Terror.
They always used to call you that in Circus Magazine, the Teutonic Terrorists. I was like, what the f*** does Teutonic mean? Is that
I don't know. It's us. It's
the German Teutonic Terrorists. But so how was that playing with the symphony? That's insane.
Dude, it was a trip. It was amazing.
Killer.
Yeah.
It was killer.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'd never done it before, and we only had a couple of days to rehearse everything, but... It took months to prepare everything, to write the scores. And so there was a lot of preparation that went into it. But at the end of the day, it was something that we'd never done before. And here we are.
It was
fantastic. In front of like 80,000 people and worldwide streaming. And shit, this was the big moment. And it went really, really well.
So are you doing like Balls to the Wall, for example? With
even Faster the Shark and shit like that.
Wow. Yeah, did Shark with the symphony orchestra.
Who transposed it and who conducted it and all that sort of thing?
Well, different people. The scores were written by a guy called Melo Mafali. He's sort of a pianist and very all-around genius kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the score. And then you had an orchestra from Prague, 50 people. We shipped them up to Wacken. And they came with a conductor.
We went there, rehearsed with them in their studio, and then
how much did you have to rehearse?
Not that much. It was only a couple days, right?
Yeah, 2 days, but really they were so good. I mean, literally, these guys,
they're used to it.
I mean, they get the scores, they go a little, take 5 minutes, okay, let's do it, boom, perfect.
It makes you realize, like,
I mean, there's people that can actually play.
As a, that's what you mean, know. I was just gonna say,
well, they're real musicians.
We're musicians, yeah. But then you see those guys, and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, what the hell
are
you
doing? Like
it was way cool, though, man.
Yeah.
It was, and especially for Christopher and I, we had both played in orchestra when we were kids, you know?
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, he's always been a concert drummer. And I actually played tuba in the orchestra when I was a kid for years.
Dude, I was a trombone player.
There you go. Nice.
Brass section unite.
It was just a great thing.
Yeah. So it was great. So we're going to have that out on DVD, and then we're going to play some more shows like that next year on a smaller scale, indoor shows, regular venues, like nice venues. But
when you did the Wacken show, were you headlining?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah,
the first night was called the
Night to Remember, right?
Usually the first night is where they do unusual, whatever, special stuff. And that was our night.
I mean, that's 80,000 people.
I know. It's insane.
Plus the bazillion online, because it was all streamed live.
Right, yeah. So talk about a little bit of a pressure there.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about everyone having their phones and filming it and stuff,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was way cool.
That's cool. Now are you going to use Sneap again?
Yeah.
You're going to have to pay him more money now, because he's in Judas Priest.
Fuck that. He ain't getting more.
He's going to do it for free. We got him to kick.
Yeah, that's right. And you got him in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, exactly.
Last question. What's your favorite song to play live?
Oh, man.
Or to sing live? Of yours and of the past.
That's hard, man. Damn. Probably of mine, I would say Shadow Soldiers.
Yeah,
just
that's a
because
good song. That's a fun song to play.
I actually get to sing. I don't get to sing a whole lot. You know, there's a lot more screaming than singing going on.
Yeah.
The old stuff, wow, man, that's even harder. I don't know, man.
Demon's Night.
Yeah, yeah.
That's obscure.
Yeah.
Actually, I really enjoy singing Up to the Limit, because it's just so much fun.
That's a good
tune. The
crowd
really digs it.
Yeah.
It's just, by that time, I'm usually, you know, firing on all cylinders. By the time,
you know, people always ask me, aren't you tired of playing Balls to the Wall and Princess, because you've done it like 2 million times? But the answer is no. I mean, usually those songs are actually the ones that I enjoy the most, because you don't have to think about it. It's almost autopilot.
Yeah.
And it's
Metal
fun
Heart too. Same
and
thing.
It's fun to get into to have the interaction with the audience, because those songs are so simple, but the audience gets into them. So,
the thing is, to anybody that says that doesn't understand the real power of music, because, okay, you've played it 1,000 times, 10,000 times.
Yeah.
There's people that have never heard Accept.
Right.
I've never seen Accept play. I'm going to watch you guys tonight.
Yeah.
So for the first time ever, I get to hear Balls to the Wall. So anybody that says, are you sick of it? I hope not, because I'm super excited to hear it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the beauty and the magic of being a musician and doing these things.
And at the end of the day, we're not there to entertain us.
Yes.
We're there to entertain the audience. If they're digging it, it's fine by me.
Well, I got you on that one, because I've seen you wrestle more times than I could ever count, man.
Really?
My son and I were such, like, when he was a kid in the late 90s, early 2000s, the whole Y2J thing, man.
Right on. Meadowlands or where?
Meadowlands. Yeah. Every time he came through, it was either, you know, Monday for Raw. Thursday for SmackDown, whatever came through. We went there a bunch of times, but we watched religiously.
You never know.
Every
right?
week.
You never know who's going to be out there. Like I said, I have Medal of Honor on cassette and album, because I couldn't just have it on album, because I couldn't travel with it when I got a shitty car when I was 18, so I bought it on cassette. So there you go.
All right, you fanboys. Enough of that now. We have a show to play.
You guys got a show to play.
There you go.
Typical German. Get out of here.
Mach schnell. Los, schnell, schnell, schnell.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, man.
It was a pleasure.
Awesome.
All right, thanks to Wolf and Mark. Remember, Accept's new record, Symphonic Terror, live at Wacken 2017, is available now wherever you buy music. You can also order it on their website at acceptworldwide.com. All right, Fozzy's still rocking Canada. We're doing the final dates of the entire Judas Rising tour. We've been to over 20 countries. Canada's the final one, and the final shows are happening this week. Tonight, Wednesday, November 28th at the Rock Pile in Toronto. Come check it out. Friday, Thunder Bay at Crocs. Saturday, December 1st, Winnipeg at the Burton Cummings Theater, homecoming for me. December 2nd, Regina at the Exchange. December 3rd, Edmonton at the Starlight Room. And December 4th, the final show of the Judas Rising Tour is in Calgary at the Gateway. We will see you there. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information, including how to buy tickets for one of Fozzy's legendary VIP meet and greets. It is one of the best in the business. Everyone who does it says they love it and says it's the favorite VIP they've ever had. You get a free mini concert We take pictures. We sign an 8x10 for you. We hang out and chat. It's a great, great time. Everybody across the world loves the Fozzy's VIP program. If you want to join us, go to FozzyRock.com. You get a chance to meet Jack Slade as well. Thank you so much. And coming up on Friday, Nikki Novak from Fandango returns to Talk is Jericho for the Christmas movie preview special. She's breaking down the box office hits and telling you what to see and what to skip at theaters this holiday season. Always a great time with Nikki. We always have a blast. So we will see you on Friday for the Christmas movie preview. In the meantime, in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big,
you get your balls to the wall, man!
The Westwood One Podcast Network.